Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Welcome into Hail Varsity Radio. Danny Burke here alongside Dr. Petey, Derek Peterson in studio with us. Schmitty out again today, feeling a little bit under the weather, taking a couple days off here, but we're going to give it to him, well deserved. So once again, Dr. Petey and I taking over. You can find us on Twitter at Danny Burke 5, at Dr. Petey HB, and of course at Hail Varsity. We'll be posting clips on SoundCloud, on Twitter, and of course the podcast on iTunes. And first and foremost, Derek, how you doing today, buddy?
I'm good, man. You know what I think happened with Schmitty?
What's that?
I think he heard Tanner Farmer and just got so excited and tried to run through a wall, and I don't think it worked.
Or maybe he tried to squat as much as him. It just all went to hell.
I don't even want to know what my body would do if I tried to squat 765 pounds.
You need to just
it would break.
Yeah.
It would 100% break.
Thought the bar was about to break there. It was bending at the sides, but that was awesome to see.
That's just, I can't even imagine 765 pounds. Don't get in a fight with Tanner Farmer.
No, that is for sure. And feel free to reach us here. Schillingbridge Cork and Tap House lets you do that. 1-800-825-5865 or 466-3776. Once again, 466-3776 or toll free 800-825-5865. We've got a jam-packed show today coming up in our next segment at 425. Erin Sorensen, she'll be coming on to talk about the running back room, the rebuild. And just as we were talking about, a little bit of Tanner Farmer. And then in the second hour, Bill Dolman of NBC Sports, the Pride of Fairbury, he'll be joining us, as well as Greg Smith to talk a little bit about the O-line recruiting and a bunch more. So a good show coming to you. And with fall camp just starting, we were going to get into the press conferences yesterday because Derek was there. But before we could do that, we had some breaking news in the Urban Meyer debacle here. And we figured we'd start the show with that because this was just released. He put out a statement, and Derek, you've been looking at it a lot. Do you want to give us a little overview of kind of what he said and just involving the whole situation?
Yeah, essentially what he said was, I knew in 2015 and I followed a procedure that I needed to follow in terms of reporting it to whoever I needed to report it to. And then he goes on to say that when I was asked about it at Big Ten Media Days on July 24th, I was not prepared to answer questions about such a sensitive case. Is essentially the meat of it.
Right.
I think maybe people were expecting a resignation given the length of the letter that he posted. No resignation. To me and my timeline, basically, this reads like he's preparing for a legal fight. Mm-hmm. It reads like, I did what I was supposed to do. People above me didn't. But, I mean, like, it reads like, I don't care what the public says about me, because he essentially admits to lying to hundreds of media at Big Ten Media Days in Chicago when he, I mean, what was the quote that he gave? He was like, I got a text last night that something happened in 2015. There was nothing. Once again, I don't know who creates a story like that. Mm-hmm. That was him on July 24th. And now he's saying, yeah, I knew and I reported and I did what I was supposed to do.
Yeah, and he's saying the reason he didn't say it at Big Ten Media Days is because he wouldn't have been able to answer that to the best of his ability. He wasn't prepared to answer it, right?
Yeah, he said he wasn't prepared to answer it. Why are you firing the coach the day before you talked then? Why are you opening yourself up to those questions?
Yeah, you have to know that's going to come at you at some point. That's the biggest news in your program right there.
How are you not prepared for that? Like, that blows my mind. I don't understand why you would choose to fire the guy. Because when we were there in Chicago, when that news broke, I thought about this. I was like, he either has to fire the guy today and face constant questions about it tomorrow. That's all his press conference is going to turn into. Or he waits until afterwards. And then the press conference is just all about, okay, well, what did you know? Is he going to get fired? Is he going to stay on? But just this whole timeline of events, it doesn't make sense from Urban Meyer's side. And when you look at the statement that he gave, it's like, okay, he's positioning himself and trying to insulate himself from being fired for breach of contract or something like that. It makes sense from that. But I don't understand. If you knew, why does it take 3 years for him to get fired? If you knew and then you fire him a day before media days, why are you not prepared to answer questions about
that? Are you not expected to answer questions about that?
I mean, I don't know. I think the main question that needs to be answered now, and hopefully this is the question that the investigation gets to, is, okay, if you knew, which it's pretty clear that he did in 2015, why did he not get fired? Why did you choose to keep him on? I think that's the question now that needs to get answered.
And I think he's going to redirect that to his upper management, which he pretty much said in that statement, saying, I passed it along. It was up to them at that point. And you were saying before the show, this is pretty much just like how Penn State went down, where you pass it off to the upper management, let them handle it. Now let's get back to me coaching football. And you would think that in this era, with everything that's happened in the past, these coaches would learn that not only is it going to come out, but it'll come out with so much more of a storm even nowadays because of social media and how people are able to find out things and how quickly news is going to spread like wildfire. So lying, like he had to have known, maybe, I mean, clearly he didn't, but you got to imagine that these coaches expect if you lie, it's going to come back to bite you in the butt at some point, especially in the heat of the summer coming up to football season. The day after, like you said, they just fired him. You can't just blatantly lie and then expect it to go all the way.
This is bad news season. And yeah. This is when bad news comes out. I think what you run into a lot of times with coaches is there's a little bit of ego with guys that are in a position, say like Nick Saban or Urban Meyer is at Ohio State, where they have such a reputation built up around them that they feel somewhat insulated to things that happen. So if a story breaks or something like that, there's a sense of, well, I can just deny it and people will take that at face value. Mm-hmm. And so I think you'll run into situations where Urban Meyer sees that reporting and is like, well, Moore is not going to come out. I'm going to be fine if I deny it. And then he does. And then Moore comes out and Moore always comes out. Like there's never a situation we haven't had a situation like this where more information doesn't come out, where the truth doesn't come out eventually. Like we're still figuring out things about Baylor.
Mm-hmm. It's only going to keep piling on, getting worse. So that's why people originally were like, you should have just told the truth right away. And it's still a bad situation, but I think you wouldn't have lost as much respect and maybe the possibility of coaching certain games, which brings me to my question. Do you think that this statement protects him or is only going to cause more outrage because he's admitting that he knew and lied? But the way that he worded it and said that he followed his contract, do you think that will protect him eventually?
It deals in absolutes, the language that he uses in the contract, or the statement that he put out. So essentially, he said, I did this, I did this, I did this when I was supposed to do it. If that's true, and those are facts, you can prove those things. If he reported it to somebody and somebody was told by Urban Meyer that, hey, this guy was committing domestic abuse, if somebody was told that, then he is positioning himself to where he's safe.
Right.
But you have to prove that those things are true.
Exactly.
And that's what the investigation has to do.
Yeah. And it's the main question, too, is how is this going to affect the season? Not more so if he's going to coach games or not, if he's going to get suspended. I think it's how are these players going to take it? That's my question. They're not doing any interviews. They're without their coach right now who's on paid leave. Ohio State's a great program with a great football team. How much does this affect them going into this season?
I mean, they're one of the top teams in the country. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't.
That's why if they kept on the success going, it wouldn't surprise me because they're so talented and well coached. But it's such a big distraction with such a coach like Urban Meyer, who just is the man for that school, that program, that city, that state. I think it could be detrimental to a certain extent, maybe not right at the beginning, but in those big games, for sure.
If it lingers on, yeah, it probably has an effect. I mean, I thought when things were coming out about Michigan State during the college basketball season, I thought that all of the clouds and everything hanging over Tom Izzo's head was going to affect that team, and it really didn't.
That's
through the
true.
Regular season.
I did too.
This team, I think Ohio State has had the benefit of just basically getting whatever coach they want to come coach on their staff. So they have a bunch of talented coaches on staff. I don't think there's going to be an issue of getting the kids coached up if Urban Meyer is not around.
Right.
But if it lingers into late in the season, if there are still questions, if it's still, well, we don't know if Urban's going to get fired or not. I mean, it has to have an effect, you would think. Mm-hmm. It just, you can't block all of that stuff out. And I say that at the same time, I think players, a lot of times when stuff like this happens, they kind of group up together,
yeah,
and just say, we're just going to block everything out. We're going to focus on us. Mm-hmm. We're going to play for the team and not, or we're going to play for the players and not necessarily the coach or the team. And I think sometimes that you expect disappointment and in terms of team production, and sometimes it doesn't come when players do stuff like that.
Yeah, that's a fair point. The camaraderie definitely could build up with a lot of people against you. The only people who are going to trust what you say and agree with what you say and know what you're experiencing are your teammates around you. So you're absolutely right. I think that it could make them stronger in that aspect, but you know, when it comes to the play calling, just strategy, everything, that's, of course, where it's going to hurt you there.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to miss him. There's no doubt about it. If he's not around, you're going to miss him. He's one of the best coaches in the country right now.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those situations, just because of how big of a name it is, how big of a program, I can't imagine it not lingering throughout most of the season. It seems like it would be an issue that could maybe be solved right away. Not saying, you know, just how bad it was itself in the overall issue, but determining Urban's future and what's going to happen. But I think just because of how powerhouse of a program Ohio State is and how much of an uproar has been going on throughout the public, I think it's going to keep carrying on for most of the season.
I think there needs to be, I mean, me personally, I think there needs to be punishment for what happened.
Yeah.
Whether that's a suspension for X number of games, whether that's getting fired, I don't know. That's for them to determine. But I also, something that I wouldn't rule out because it's Ohio State. I mean, this would be their two of their winningest coaches in program history that would have their tenures ended by scandals. Mm-hmm. You can't. I mean, you just can't do that.
Yeah.
I don't know that the administration will do that.
Yeah. I think what will end up happening is a suspension to some extent, I would imagine.
I could see that.
I'm trying to think what would surprise me. I think him being fired, originally I said I could see it happening, but then at the end when Schmitty and I were talking about it the other day, I said he's at least going to get suspended. There's going to be some kind of repercussion, some kind of deterrent that's going to happen to him. But I almost want to say it would surprise me more if nothing happened, but it's just one of those things with these powerhouse programs. Again, you see that, you know, they kind of get away with it, but in today's age, I don't think you're able to with social media and everything and all the recent events, scandal, sexual abuse, domestic violence that's been going on recently, especially in the Big Ten. I don't see how you can just throw this one under the rug by any means. There has to be some kind of punishment.
And there are odds right now out for like who's going to be their head coach when they start the season. And I saw like Matt Campbell has like the second best odds. Like, I don't think they're going to have a different, an outside hire by the time the season starts.
Yeah, that'd be ridiculous.
That would mean in the next month they're going to A, fire or A, conclude their investigation, mm-hmm. B, fire Urban Meyer, and C, find a coach somewhere else that is just going to be like, yeah, okay, I'll just pick up a month before the season starts and move to someplace new and coach a team that I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to happen. I think more likely than not, whoever the interim guy is right now, and I'm blanking on his name, he'll be the coach when they mm-hmm. come out for the first game of the season.
Yeah, they made sure not to make it Schiano.
They made sure not to make it anybody that has been on staff previously. It's a brand new face.
Yeah.
And I think that's pretty telling, too. The thing, I mean, they play TCU in week three. They play a really good TCU team in week three. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious what the team looks like.
Yeah, by that time for sure. And you mentioned odds. I think when the story broke originally, I saw, might have been BetDSI or some kind of offshore betting site, they had minus 200 that Urban Meyer would not be head coach by the first game of the season. And now, I think I saw something yesterday, it flipped to minus 200. So you'd have to bet 200 to win 100 that he would be coach. So the odds keep flipping there. I think he will be coached by the first game. Will he be part of that first game? I don't know. I'm leaning towards no, but I don't know. That's what I do if I'm putting my money. I think it would be crazy if Matt Campbell somehow switched to be Ohio State's coach. I don't see that happening.
That's not happening.
No.
I think Vegas is just trying to take people's money.
Oh, yeah.
Do you want to talk about Nebraska in the last, we got 2 minutes?
Yeah,
you want to talk
about
Nebraska?
Minutes here. So we were going to hit the press conference yesterday. You were there. We're going to talk about it with Aaron Sorensen after this commercial break coming up. But why don't you give us just a quick little rundown of just kind of the whole vibe of it and what you liked, what you saw when you were there.
Guys were happy. I mean, guys were just in a good mood. Like, I'm sure you've seen Tanner Farmer's walk-off quote that he set up
for.
That
was fantastic.
Tapped the podium and then walked away. Like who does that? Like, there was just a sense of happiness. And there's always a sense of excitement and a sense of kind of newness whenever a season is getting going. I mean, there was excitement last year.
Right.
This just felt different. I mean, guys were just happy. They're in a good mood.
Yeah, I think there's excitement every year, and you said last year there was. But with the excitement last year, I think there was an uneasy feeling with it. I remember everyone's excited because football's coming back. But me personally, I had this thought like, yeah, it's awesome. Football's back. But I just don't know if I have confidence in this team. It's going to be awesome to watch them play. But I don't know if we're going to be doing well. But I'm excited that football's back. Whereas now, you're excited that football's back, and you're excited because you think we have a chance to be a powerhouse program that we should be at once again.
Well, and you have every single player on the team essentially saying, yeah, we're going to shock some people this year. I mean, you don't have players saying, well, we got to figure out what we're going to be, or we got to figure out X, Y, and Z. That's right. Like, we're going to be really good.
Yeah.
That's what they're saying. And I think that's cause for excitement. That's the happiness creeping through and the confidence in Coach Frost and what he brings.
Definitely. So we'll talk a little bit more about that with Aaron Sorensen coming up next. You're listening to Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Welcome back to Hail Varsity Radio. It's Derek Peterson here with you guys. I got Danny Burke. Are you producing or are you co-hosting? Or are you hosting? What's your title today?
We'll do co-host and producer. We're both co-hosting here, so
I think
we're going by committee.
Okay, that works. And we've got Aaron Sorensen on the phone.
That's right.
Yeah, Aaron? Are you there?
Hi.
Hello.
I am.
How are you?
I'm good.
It's been like a whole 2 hours since I talked to you.
I know. For anyone who isn't privy to all the behind the scenes, you talked to me a lot, but yes, we did just talk 2 hours ago.
One of the things that we didn't talk about, let's hit on it now. You wrote a story about the running back room, and Nebraska added Maurice Washington in the last week, confirmed he will be playing in 2018, and he joins a room that is pretty crowded at this point. We found out from Scott Frost on Thursday that Mikael Wilbon is not transferring or is not leaving the team despite rumors that he wasn't going to make the 110. They've got Divine Ozigbo. They've obviously got Jalen Bradley. Trey Bryant appears to be healthy and a guy that they want to get some reps for in the fall. And then obviously you've got Greg Bell coming in. So that's a crowded room. You wrote about that. How do you feel about the running back room heading into the season?
I mean, what a difference 8 months makes. I think, you know, there was a point over this offseason where we really thought, you know, the running back position could be an area of concern. I mean, there's still definitely question marks there, but the difference is now, is there question marks in the sense of, like, you've got all these people who can play and who's going to end up being, I hate this term, but the bell cow, the person who carries, you know, the majority of the load. There's so many of these questions, whereas before it was like, who's even going to be available to play? So, I mean, I think everyone's really excited to see Greg Bell in fall camp. He had a great, you know, he had a great spring, and people were excited about him through the spring to begin with, but then getting Trey Bryant back is huge. And then you do, like you said, Wilbon, we kind of all thought he was like 1 foot out the door because he wasn't supposedly on the 110, but it was confirmed that he is on the 110. And then you have Maurice Washington, who Frost is basically now saying, well, we'll see how he, you know, we know he's a great athlete, and we'll see how he fits, because they have this just this endless amount of talent at running back. And so it's funny to me in hindsight to think, like, this was an area of concern for us, you know, 6 months ago, and now Nebraska has a lot of options. And Ryan Held was, you know, spoke about it last night as well. And, I mean, they're not in a bad position, that's to say the least.
Aaron, speaking of the running back room being crowded, a lot of the conversation that came up revolved around Divine Ozigbo and what his role might be. Talk a little bit about those seniors and upperclassmen who may not see the field as much, but what role they're kind of embracing in this upcoming season.
Yeah, the one thing I really took away from Divine's time yesterday at the podium is that he has really embraced he's really embraced his place as a leader on this team, both on the field and then off the field. And, you know, whether he's on the sideline, he's in the game, it does not matter. He was talking about his teammates, talking about Trey Bryan, saying, you know, he's looking like he's good to go. And, you know, he kind of sounded like a proud older brother when he was talking about him almost. And then he said, you know, he's his own biggest competition. He's going to push himself to also be better. But he's not disillusioned by the idea that there are plenty of other guys who want to take playing time. And I think that's the right way to approach this, where, you know, when you have such a crowded room, you have to be able to take a step back and go, there might be people better than me, but I'm going to keep working hard. And that's really how Ozigbo has been really approaching this even since spring. So I like where he is as a leader. I think he's incredibly valuable to this team. And I think he's going, you know, I think he's one of those people that he's going to go down in Husker football history as, you know, somebody that will be very memorable, whether he produces, you know, big numbers on the field or not. But he will be remembered well by fans because of what he was able to do as a leader for this team. And sometimes those are your most monumental players. So I think that's sort of how he's aligning himself. And I like that from him, because guys in his situation could go the other way. And he definitely is embracing his role as a senior and a leader on this team.
Yeah, people love him because of the work ethic. Aaron Sorensen, the comeback kid, joining us on Hail Varsity Radio right now. Aaron, I want to pivot a little bit and talk to you about, or ask you about, something that we've heard players talk about for the last 2 weeks now, both when we were in Chicago for Big Ten Media Days and then Thursday at the pre-fall camp press conference, and that was that this season is not a rebuild. Do not call this season a rebuild. We heard players talk about how they feel like they can shock the world. You said you heard Luke Gifford talk about how this is not, I mean, they're not throwing the word rebuild around in this building because they feel like they've got talent and they feel like they can do something. I guess, bluntly, do you buy that?
I'm glad that they feel that way. I feel like, you know, our job as reporters are to be the ones that take a harder look at it. And, you know, we're not the ones that necessarily are going to say, oh, it's a national championship season. But that's not what they're supposed to do. I'm glad that they are looking at this from the point of view of, why not us? It goes like what we said with volleyball last year. That was supposed to be a rebuilding year for volleyball, and they won the national championship. Now, not saying that's exactly what's going to happen with football. It's a much more daunting task to take that on. But, you know, to think that they don't want to finish fourth or fifth in the west part of the Big Ten, the West Division of the Big Ten, I should say it like that. The fact that they want to finish better, they want to be, they want to be feared by opponents. They want to be a contender in the Big Ten and talked about on a national, on the national stage. Good for them. That is how they should be embracing it. And so, they should absolutely not be thinking this is a rebuilding year. Leave that to us who get to dissect the season and, ultimately be right or wrong or whatever else. But that's our job to analyze. Their job is to dream, to play hard, work hard, and they're doing that. So good for them. That's the way college football players should be approaching the season.
Well, and half of accomplishing anything is believing that you can accomplish that. So
exactly.
Yeah. One more thing that I loved from yesterday was Tanner Farmer, who basically wrote our stories for us. You were in the room when he, dropped the mic, basically. How did you feel about that statement that he gave, the confidence that he has? Where do you think that comes from?
I think that Tanner Farmer's always been a big personality. You see some of the photos of him along the way, and he's always sort of had that big personality. I think for him, where a lot of that is coming from is that emotion by being a senior. I mean, this is it. He's been through a lot. It's sort of, this is it's do or die at this point. Like, you either go out on a high note or you don't. And I think for, when I talked to a lot of the seniors last year, one of the things that was really difficult for them was knowing they didn't get a bowl game. And so their seasons just kind of came to a kerfunk after Iowa. And, you know, you could see how disappointing that was for them. And I'm sure the seniors like Tanner Farmer are looking at that going, that's not how I want this year to end. That's not how I want this whole thing to be. I want an exclamation point on the end of my career at Nebraska. I don't want just, you know, a dot, dot, dot. I want there to be something definitive and exciting about the end of it. And so I think that's where we're seeing some of that emotion, especially from these seniors, because they want to leave something behind that they feel good about. And I'm not saying that the last year's senior class didn't, but I definitely do feel like there was a bit of disappointment in how it all ended. And I think that really stuck with those juniors, that that's not how they want this to end this year. And so you see the emotion. And like I said, like you said, like Tanner Farmer wrote all of our stories for us. But like, I felt like when he was done, like I needed to stand up and start clapping for him, or like look for like the class president voting box and like go vote for him. Like he was so, we're not supposed to, as the media, we're not supposed to cheer. We're not supposed to like have a rooting opinion, but it was, I could tell when he was done, all of us sitting in that room were almost like, do we clap? Like, what do we do now? Because you just felt so like excited from him and for him. So everyone just kind of looked around the room like, what do we do now? And so it was kind of funny to watch him proudly walk out and Luke Gifford walk up like, how do I follow that? So good for him. I'm glad that he was so excited. And like I said, he got us all amped up. And hey, that was a nice way to spend a Thursday, actually being like super pumped up.
Aaron Sorensen with us on Hail Varsity Radio, at Aaron Sorensen on Twitter. And Aaron, kind of reverting back to that running back room situation, a lot of times with college football teams, you see a lot of the players maybe act a little bit more selfishly just out there to put their name out there, get their reps, and then try to make that next step to the pros. And revolving around the running back room where everyone's trying to get an edge over the other, do you see that happening, or is there still just a camaraderie there? Everyone's rooting for each other, picking each other up, despite wanting to get that first string spot, especially the seniors. You talked about it with Ozigbo. But do you see that in the running back room and just throughout the team overall?
Well, I mean, I'll be honest, like, egos will always get in the way, and that's not to say that there won't be some headbutting, especially in fall camp as things start to get decided, and that's not a bad thing if there is. The only thing that you hope at the end of it is that there is respect, and I kind of liked what Tanner Farmer said, you know, like, before, when they would hit some, like, not-so-good situations, they would not know how to work themselves out of it, whereas that's something that they're addressing now, how to continue to be friends when you face adversity or when somebody gets something that you want but you didn't get. So I think that that's a challenge of being a teammate. And so, yeah, it's not going to be perfect every day. Somebody's going to have to eventually unseat another person. But what you hope that you see out of that is you hope you see those relationships prevail. You hope you see the good outweigh the bad. And so, yeah, maybe somebody's disappointed, but you hope that it doesn't, like, tear the team down. And that's what you can tell that they're building towards. And like I said, we heard it from Frost, and Farmer said it as well. They're working in harmony now. And so that's kind of your catch there. Is like, yes, you can compete. You can want to beat the guy next to you out for that starting spot, but you better respect each other. And I think it all always comes down to respect. So as long as they've got that, it'll be okay.
Aaron Sorensen, you can find her on Twitter at Aaron Sorensen. Aaron, thanks for joining us today. We'll get caught up soon.
Thank you.
Have a good rest of your day.
Yeah, happy Friday. Everyone enjoy this weekend.
That's the plan. Have a good one.
I'll talk to you later. All right, bye.
Good stuff there from Aaron, talking a little bit about the running back room, about whether the Huskers are rebuilding or just going after it, and, of course, Tanner Farmer, the Incredible Hulk, as some might call him. But we'll get into a little bit of the preseason polls coming up next, talk a little bit about the Huskers yesterday and Derek Peterson's experience. You're listening to Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Get your chance at Ribfest tickets. We'll be giving those away at the end of the second hour. We're giving away a pair for August 16th through 18th for Capital City Ribfest. We'll give out caller number 5, not right now, but in the second hour we'll be getting to that. But for now, If you follow Derek on Twitter, at DrPDHV, at DannyBurke5 for myself, Derek went off a little bit about the preseason poll.
Went off a little bit.
Involving Frost's former employer. And Derek, we're going to let you get into it right now. Time to let it all go. Why were you mad about the preseason coaches poll ranking for UCF?
I mean, it's the first time the coaches poll, it's the first and only time the coaches poll matters all year. But I just found it a little disrespectful that Central Florida goes from 7th at the end of last season to 23rd to begin this season. And the people, and I tweeted something along the lines of, I don't really understand how the coaches, because to drop them that much based on what they lost a couple pieces on defense. They lost five starters on defense, including Mike Hughes and Shaquem Griffin, who are big losses. Mm-hmm. They're big losses. Everybody in the country has big losses.
Sure.
Everybody loses people. Central Florida returns maybe one of the top five best quarterbacks in the country in McKenzie Milton, who as a sophomore last year was one of the most efficient quarterbacks in the country, will now be a junior, will now play in mostly the same offense. Athletic Director Danny White wanted to bring in somebody that wasn't going to change the offense too much, and he did exactly that with Josh Heupel from Missouri. And so to drop them that much says to me that the coaches were like, Scott is a 16-spot difference by himself. And Scott and the rest of the coaching staff as well. But, I mean, and people are talking about, well, the entire coaching staff left. Well, entire coaching staffs leaves all the time when coaches turn over. A new coach gets brought in, and he brings in new people for his staff. Most of the time, most guys don't stay with staffs when coaches change. It's just different in the sense that everybody went to Nebraska with Scott as opposed to everybody going their separate ways. So I just found it very, very strange that Central Florida got dropped that much because they viewed Scott as that big of a loss, and then it wasn't reciprocated to the new team that Scott was on. And I'm not talking about Nebraska should have been ranked. That's not what I'm trying to get at, because they shouldn't have. They were 4-8 last year, and they were really bad, and they have to prove that they are better than what they were last year. But not even one vote? He's that big of a loss to drop a really good Central Florida team that returns a Heisman contender at quarterback and a bunch of weapons on offense? He's that big of a loss to drop them that much, and he can't even get his new team one vote? It just
doesn't add up.
I didn't understand it.
I honestly...
Tangent done.
I don't hate it. I understand completely no votes for Nebraska. The dropping for Central Florida, I don't know, what would you think would be an appropriate ranking for them?
They need to be in the top 15. They were the only undefeated team in the country last year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think their Twitter account went on a pretty significant tangent as well, and they were tweeting out teams like nobody that returns a quarterback like McKenzie Milton that went undefeated a season ago has been ranked lower than 15th, I think. And the teams that went undefeated a season previous and that were preseason ranked lower than 15th lost a quarterback. I just think it shows a level of continued disrespect to the Group of Five teams,
sure.
I think.
I think a reasoning behind this, of course, Scott Frost and company, they all left. I think another factor that comes into this is just a couple seasons ago, they didn't win a single game. And it's not like they're a storied program by any means in a Power Five conference. So I think it has to do with experience and history that goes behind it as well, which is why it causes concern and questioning for putting them in your desired top 15. That would be my reasoning for why they would go that far down. If it were, like we were saying, in Ohio State, in Penn State, Michigan State, any Big Ten team, Alabama, Georgia, whoever, if they had that situation, lost their coaching staff, I think they would be placed that high still. And I think everyone would agree with that, and they would cause outrage if they were placed where UCF was placed. But UCF does not have that kind of history and backstory and tradition in football that can back they're trash talking up or they're I get the undefeated record, I understand that, but it's cause for concern when the whole staff leaves who brought you to that undefeated record. So I could see why you would be a little weary to put them pretty high.
Why was Ohio State the first team that popped in your head? I don't know. Is there something going on with them?
We were talking about them earlier.
Is there something going on with them?
I don't know. I think they're missed it.
Apparently, this is a hill that I will not. This is not a hill that I'm going to die on. So I don't. I mean, contrary to what the last 10 minutes would suggest, and then my Twitter account would suggest, I'm not. You know, staying up late at night just fuming over the fact that Central Florida was 23rd. But I think there should be a little bit more respect paid to that level of offense. They could be, I mean, they could drop, they were first or second in offense last year in almost every single category. They could be a top 10 offense this season and still win 10 games.
Yeah, so here are some of the teams ahead of them at 22, Boise State, then Texas coming in at 21. I think that's pretty big right there.
I thought Texas... We've reached the time-honored tradition of Texas starting the season ranked. Texas is back, and then we're going to get into like week three, and Texas will have lost two games to start and looked absolutely awful in the one game that they won. We'll be like, oh, well, maybe Texas isn't back.
Yeah, and then we got West Virginia at 20, Florida State 19, Mississippi State 18. I don't know. Some of those are a little surprising. I could see where you would argue UCF over some of those teams.
You telling me Mississippi State, without one of the best coaches in program history, is better than Central Florida?
Yeah, that's a little ridiculous. I think, why is TCU so low? 16?
That's pretty good for TCU.
You think so?
Yeah, they're replacing a quarterback.
Yeah. Oh, they always seem to surprise me, though, every season. Not surprise me, but they do a little bit better than I expect them to.
Because TCU plays defense in the Big 12.
Mm-hmm.
If you play defense in the Big 12, you're going to be good. And evidenced by Kansas State just perennially, if I could talk, being a team that is just a pain in the butt for, you know, a team like Oklahoma or a team like Oklahoma State at the top of the conference. And then West Virginia plays defense. Mm-hmm. So if you can play defense, you're going to be pretty good.
Sure. So, and then we'll go to the top, obviously Alabama. Then we got Clemson, Ohio State, and coming in at 4, Georgia, and Oklahoma top 5. Any of those surprise you, shock you, disappoint you, or just right?
I think they got the top 10 pretty correct. Who do you think?
With everything going on now, I'm putting Georgia ahead of Ohio State.
Really?
And I would maybe do that before this whole scandal, too. I think Georgia's a great team. They have a bunch of recruits coming in. Kirby Smart, fantastic coach. A lot of momentum from last season. I think they got a lot of hype coming for them.
Maybe I'm a little surprised that Oklahoma was 5th. 7th or 8th, maybe. Is probably where I would have put them. I mean,
would you put Wisconsin ahead of them?
I think so.
Yeah, Wisconsin comes in at 7.
Maybe I'm not. I mean, maybe Washington. Maybe, mm-hmm. But I
think Washington would be the only one, in my opinion.
I think OU's going to have a little bit rougher year than what they're used to.
Yeah. Well, you would know better than most, so I will take your opinion on that.
They got a bad schedule.
Yeah.
Who do you think of the Big Ten finishes ranked highest?
It'll still be Ohio State.
You think so?
Yeah.
Okay, who's second?
Honestly, it's going to be Wisconsin, but I think Michigan State might beat Wisconsin. It's like, if you put them head-to-head, I'd maybe take Michigan State.
Maybe Michigan does it.
We'll see. You're thinking the Huskers are beating Michigan. So.
Yeah, I am. Yep, you got me.
All right, we'll be right back after this quick break. You're listening to Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Welcome back to Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. 10 minutes from now, Bill Dolman of NBC Sports will be joining us. And then about 30 minutes from now, Greg Smith of Hail Varsity, recruiting analyst for Hail Varsity, will join us as well. Danny Burke alongside Derek Peterson. And Brian on the phone. Brian, what's up, man?
First off, I want to say you guys are doing a hell of a job healing the Schmitty out.
Appreciate that.
No problem. My question was, though, like, I know last year, after practice, we pretty much had a media update pretty much every day after practice, or pretty close. How is Frost and company kind of formatting the media practice updates? I know they practiced today, I assumed. But I'm just wondering, I know it sounds to me like they're going to kind of keep media out of practice pretty much, I'm assuming, all fall camp or for the most part. And I was just kind of wondering how they're going to update the media so us fans know kind of what's going on and whatnot.
Yeah, we're gonna get. I'm getting a schedule sent to me. I had one in my backpack and I took it out, so I'm getting it sent to me. So I'll give you exact times if you want them. But we're gonna get open like 20-30 minutes of open practice towards the beginning. Next week and then the following week, we'll get to see probably them stretch. But for the most part, it's gonna be closed.
There won't be much as far as to how today went until probably what Monday, I suppose.
Yeah, and even then, like, I don't think we're not going to see, you know, which quarterback is taking reps with the first team. Like, I would be shocked if they showed us anything substantial that we could put into like an observations post or anything like that. In terms of media availability and us getting to talk to coaches and things like that, things pretty much are going to stay the same. We're gonna get assistant coaches after practices. We're gonna get players after practices. Really, the only things that are changing from the last regime in terms of media availability is in post games. We're not gonna get assistant coaches. So whereas last year, where Bob Diaco didn't want to talk after games, and he had to, this year Eric Chenander will not be talking after games. But we will get them throughout the week, and then we're also Scott mentioned this yesterday, that we're not going to get a whole lot of injury updates to players. We're not going to get specifics.
It.
Yeah, yep. So, you know,
yep.
We're just going to get season-ending injuries. And those are really the only two changes.
Okay, thank you. I know, I like that. That was pretty smart on his behalf by not releasing that. So, all right, I'll get off the phone and let you guys do your job. Thank you so much.
All righty. Thank you, Brian. And, so that is an interesting note. I remember them bringing that up, that you won't get the assistant coaches after the games this year. You think Frost maybe took some notes from the last regime?
I think he just wants to control the narrative a little bit. I think he's well aware of the fishbowl here, and he pointed it out yesterday at his press conference that he's well aware that news doesn't get held here. Like, everybody knows everything.
Yep. And I think it's not even a matter of not having trust in your coaching staff. I think it's just if one thing gets taken the wrong way, gets spun around, and then this guy says that, and then they think there's something going wrong within the team, within the coaching staff. So I think it is the right move. And I mean, like you said, the assistant coaches, you can talk to them during the week, so I think that'll be plenty as well. Obviously, everyone wants those post-game reactions immediately, but
I would much rather talk to a coach after they've had a chance to watch the film. I don't want heat of the moment when you don't. I mean, because you're not going to remember, you know, the third down in the second quarter.
Unless you're LeBron James and you remember everything.
True. They just need to add LeBron to the staff, basically.
There you go. Well, our first hour wrapping up here. Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Up next, Bill Dolman.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Welcome back to its second hour edition of Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Danny Burke alongside Dr. Petey here in the studio. You can find us on Twitter at DannyBurke5 and at DrPeteyHV. Joining us now, the pride of Fairbury of NBC Sports, Bill Dolman at Bill Dolman on Twitter. Billy D, how you doing today, buddy?
You know, I'm doing well. It's so good to be with you guys, and so good to be with you guys and not Chris.
Yeah, that's
right. He's probably listening in right now and rolling his eyes as he hears it.
It always seems like, I feel like most of this summer, it's been you and me and Colton, or you and me and Derek, but not too much of a Schmitty sighting for you.
He does a real good job of getting out of the Friday afternoon. It's like, those big cable guys who end up working 4 days a week and they get a Friday off and have a substitute host. I didn't realize he had that much power.
I guess he does, yeah. But anyways, let's get right into it. I'm sure you saw the news about Urban Meyer's statement today. It's been going on all week about him and his coach and the whole sexual abuse, domestic violence, and now a statement saying that he did know about it, but he really didn't know how to answer it at Big Ten Media Days. What are your thoughts initially when you heard about it and now with the new statement that he released?
Well, there are a couple of peculiar things about that statement. In reading it, he said, when I was at the University of Florida and at Ohio State, what about Bowling Green in Utah? I just thought that odd that he's been a head coach now at four different places, very prominent. I guess there was not an issue there. There were not problems there that he had to deal with at those two places. But I just thought it was curious. When I was at Florida and Ohio State, I did da-da-da-da-da. So those other two places, I just thought I was kind of curious. But anyway, the biggest problem, I shouldn't say the biggest, there are a lot of problems with what's going on. And I think that there are a lot of things coming back to haunt Urban Meyer and the way he's conducted his business. And a lot of people aren't talking about the guy who goes around and does the undercover videos, Project Veritas. They went and talked to some Florida guys, you know, undercover, and got a lot of damning things that were said about the way they were treated at Florida. You know, regarding the statement about 2015, and whether he did or did not know, which today he admits that he did know, when he was asked at Big 12 or Big 10 media days about it, there could have been some contrition. There could have been some delivery of understanding. Look, I know there's some controversy, or I know there are some things that need to be worked out, but I'm not at liberty to talk about those, or I'm not comfortable talking, whatever the case might have been. There could have been a sense of contrition in the way he delivered what he delivered, even though he was lying. But there was such arrogance in the way he responded to the questions, and that's the biggest problem, is that there was a guy who felt as though he was above the truth, and that those who were reporting or asking the questions, how dare they? When in reality, he could have simply answered it in a way that protected himself in some way, or at least soften the situation. Instead, he threw a match on a fuse that took, what, a week or, however long, a month to burn, and it finally blew up. And I think that Brent McMurphy's reporting is one of the finest jobs of journalism in any arena, political, news, sports, whatever the case might be. That was just a brilliant job of journalism. There's not there are no unnamed sources. He talked to Courtney Smith. The evidence, I mean, everything is out there. And, you know, there's very little journalism being done in this country anywhere right now. It's all opinion stuff, and it's all a lot of PR and massaging the truth and writing the stories you want it to be with, and the facts be damned, or the facts massaged to apply to a narrative. I think what he has done is just a real refreshing bit of journalism, and Urban Meyer, unfortunately, is on the wrong side of it, and I don't think there is any way he can come back from it, even though I'm sure Ohio State is trying to figure out a way. And based on what I'm hearing this afternoon, it sounds like they're trying to finger Gene Smith and say, Urban's okay, it's Gene Smith who's the problem.
Yeah, that was what
and
I wanted.
And that may well be the case.
Yeah, that was what I wanted to ask you about next, because as we've been on the air, I mean, Brett McMurphy has continued the truth sharing of this case, because you had, I mean, first you had Urban Meyer's statement, and then you had Zach Smith, who's done a radio hit. He's now on ESPN, essentially saying that Gene Smith knew, that Gene Smith came to him and they talked about it, that Urban handled everything the way that Urban was supposed to. And you've got Brett McMurphy on Twitter right now, basically refuting everything that Zach Smith is saying. Zach Smith on his radio show said that there was never any abuse between him and his ex-wife, that it was just an aggressive and volatile, I think was the phrasing.
Well, I think the clip that I saw is a parsing of words, and he said, I did not hit my wife. Okay. And I've not read everything. You know, I've got other things going on in my life that I don't need to study this intently. But the clip that I saw said, I did not hit. Okay. I'm sure I believe that, but a lot of what I read about was a lot of physical altercation, handling, grabbing her by the throat, pushing her against the wall. She's, you know, got pictures. She's got bruises. Okay. Maybe in your mind, you didn't hit, but you sure as hell beat her up in some way, shape, or another. That's what it appears. He's just trying to find a word that he can parse. But even though I don't believe that either. But based on what I saw, that was the narrow path that he was going down to try to declare his innocence. And I don't think anybody is going to buy it. And she is credible. There is evidence. And that story was well researched and presented. And I just don't see any way that Ohio State can get around the reporting that has been done, and I assume that will continue to be done on it.
How do you think this situation culminates? Because essentially what has happened today is Zach Smith and Urban Meyer have basically teamed up and said it's Gene Smith's fault. So either one of those, one, Urban Meyer or Gene Smith, is going to go down. Who goes down?
Well, I think they both go down. I don't see how Ohio State, okay, you take to the field. If we're going to get into an X's and O's thing, which really it should not be part of the discussion, it should be about the seriousness of the crime or the seriousness of the allegation, all that stuff. But how does Ohio State continue down that path with Urban Meyer and take to the field knowing the atmosphere that is going to be, you know, surrounding each and every game, you know, especially the road games? The reputation for Ohio State football was sullied with Jim Tressel way back when. And I think Gene Smith was there for that. He got the job in 2005. So I think from a PR standpoint, and again, this seems so trite to talk about in terms of PR, given the seriousness of what's going on with domestic abuse, how do you move on with Urban Meyer and have people take that program seriously when, you know, you're going to be recruiting against and you're going to be present? I just don't see how it's even possible. I mean, there are similarities to what Penn State faced with Joe Paterno. How do you move forward with the guy? How does he bring? I'm looking at this going, how, and when Urban Meyer got the job at Ohio State, how did Zach Smith pass what I am sure was a background check, you know, through HR, and saying, okay, what was this in 2009? What was this? What was this? What was this? What was this? And but because of Urban Meyer's power, was he able to get it through any questions that the Ohio State hiring committee allowed? I that to me is you just keep going deeper. I want to bring this guy on as my receivers coach. Okay, we got a charge here in 2009 and all of this stuff going on. How does that happen? But it was allowed. So it goes beyond what he knew in 2009 and again in 2015. It gets to be systemic. And when you're talking about systemic issues, I don't see how the powers that be can have their jobs.
Bill Dolman with us on Hail Varsity Radio at Bill Dolman on Twitter. And we're going to end the discussion with Urban Meyer on this last point right here. Bill, what do you ultimately see happening to Urban Meyer by the time the season starts, and how do you see this Buckeye season ending?
I would be shocked if Urban Meyer is coaching Ohio State football in 2018. And maybe he gets a year suspension and they try to bring him back a year from now, but it's just not going to go away. I think that this is going to be an incredibly disjointed season for a very talented team, and it's going to be a dark cloud that's going to follow them wherever they go, whatever successes they have. This is going to be a really, really bad chapter. Now, if they fire Urban Meyer and Gene Smith and say, we have to move forward and we're going to take the hits, maybe the sun starts to shine a little bit as the season goes on. You know, certainly when they got rid of Jim Tressel and Luke Fickell took over, you know, it wasn't the same Ohio State program. They were still pretty good. But for the most part, I think they emerged as the season went on. And, you know, they took their hits, but it was okay at the end. I think they need to do the same, but the allegations here are far more serious given the culture that we're in this country. So unless they move on, I don't think that dark cloud is ever going to leave as long as Urban Meyer is the head football coach.
Bill Dolman with us on Hail Varsity Radio. Bill, I want to pivot a little bit and talk about Nebraska had, I guess a media day yesterday, the pre-fall camp press conference. One of the things that Scott talked about that I think struck a chord with a lot of people was he talked about the captains and the way that he was going to name them. They had a different way of doing that when he was at Central Florida. He talked about the leadership council, but he also made the comment that he's going to be careful not to break too many traditions here at Nebraska. What do you think of when you hear him talk about captains here?
Well, I think that, you know, Scott can do what Scott wants to do and whatever works best for the program. And I think if you have guys who emerge in leadership positions, does it have to be the way that Nebraska did it in the past? you know, I think there was a certain honor to being one of the four team captains, you know, throughout the entire season. And I think you know who your leaders are. And I think it's an honor. I think when you do it every, you know, week and you change them out, I'm not sure that that necessarily is great. That just seems like everybody kind of gets a captain ribbon. But at Nebraska, it has to mean something. And if Scott has a way that he wants to get it done, then, you know, I think everybody can trust his judgment. And when he talks about honoring the past and knowing how important the captain, you know, honor is at Nebraska, how important that position is, then I think we all trust him. If it's three or four guys that are there for the entire season and maybe somebody gets to be a captain for a week, I think that's okay. But, you know, I think there has to be a team vote. Those guys know who their leaders are. And sometimes it's not the star player. Tommy Frazier was never a team captain, but everybody knew he was, you know, a leader. But I think Scott can do what Scott wants to do, and they're going to identify the guys who are at the head of the program. And right now, if you ask me, that Tanner Farmer kid reminds me of the guys who were the summer leaders back in the mid-90s. And we had a lot of them back then. But he reminds me when he talks, when you look at him, you look at his eyes. I mean, he gets the program and where it needs to go. If you can find three or four guys like that and say, you're our guys for the entire season, then so be it. But that's one guy on that program right now that reminds me of what I saw in those summer days in the mid-1990s. And I'm talking about Wistrom and Peter, the Peter brothers, Taylor. That's what I'm reminded of when I see him, and it's good to see.
Bill, we got about 2 minutes left here. I want to get you out on this note. What are your thoughts on Carmelo Anthony and potentially J.R. Smith coming to the Houston Rockets? Do you see that being detrimental to their season, not going to do enough, or going to benefit them?
You know what? I was just with some friends of mine that I used to work with the Rockets and Astros last week, and we were talking about that. You know, the Carmelo thing in Oklahoma City last year just seemed like a trade waiting to be happened. Like when Mike Piazza went from the Dodgers to the Marlins to the Mets, and he was having a cup of coffee in Miami and then went and had a Hall of Fame career in New York. The Melo thing seemed like that should have ended, you know, a long time ago, and that he should have gone someplace else before the 2018 season ended. I think if he goes to Houston and goes to a team that's going to be a contender, with Harden and Capella coming back and Chris Paul, I think at 34 years of age, he probably understands what his role needs to be with Trevor Ariza going to Phoenix. And I think you're going to find a guy that, you know, maybe 5 years ago would have to be the alpha. And I think he understands that now he's a role player to James Harden. He needs to come in off the bench, give him 15 points, hit 3, 4, 5 threes a game, and he'll have a great season, and so will they. If they think they're going to get, and if he thinks he needs to be the Carmelo of 5 years ago, it's going to be a disaster. He's a role player, and I think he knows that, and that's the sense I got from my friends who are around the organization.
That's interesting, because I think one of the knocks on him when he was in Oklahoma City was that there's a general lack of self-awareness in terms of what his game or what he brings to a team right now, because, he said that in Oklahoma City on multiple occasions. He's not here to come off the bench. He's not coming off the bench. He's not taking a reduced role. He's going to play his game. So that's interesting that you've heard opposite.
Well, I think that's what it was last year. But he's not the Carmelo of, you know, late in his career with the Nuggets and with the Knicks. He is a 34-year-old and, dare we say, journeyman, right? Now, J.R. Smith, I think, would be a disaster.
Yep.
But I think Carmelo, after last year in Oklahoma City, understanding you are. Now, he may start because of Ariza going to Phoenix, but he has to understand you're not driving it. You're not even in the shotgun seat. You're in the back, and you just play your role. And I think last year had to be humbling for him in Oklahoma City. You know, he's a 12 to 15, maybe 18 point per game kind of guy. Got to hit your threes and don't think you're going to be the star. I think he thought he should still be a big three, like it was going to be him, Westbrook, and I know Durant's gone, but like that was the missing piece. You know, Paul George is there. He just isn't that player anymore. Mm-hmm. And if he realizes that and plays a great role in Houston, I think they could absolutely contend and beat Golden State next year.
Bill Dolman with us on Hail Varsity Radio. Bill, thanks for catching up. We'll try to talk to you again next week, maybe or maybe not, with Schmitty here.
Either way, it's always a pleasure.
All right, appreciate it. Have a good one.
I'll be great.
And we're back.
Fellas, you think we could listen to the radio
on Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery?
Yes! That's awesome!
Welcome back to Hail Varsity Radio. Danny Burke alongside Derek Peterson. You can find us on Twitter at DannyBurke5, at DrPDHV. We welcome in Hail Varsity's recruiting analyst, Greg Smith, at GregSmithHV on Twitter. Greg, how are you doing today?
I'm excellent, man. How are you?
Doing pretty good. We're keeping it rolling here without Schmitty. Derek and I just rolling along. Not too bad. We got one compliment thus far on the show, so we're hanging in there.
Yeah, you take that and run with it. You hold on to that one compliment.
Nobody has called us trash yet, and I think that's all that matters.
Not to us, at least they haven't.
Not to our faces.
Yeah.
Greg, would
if
you...
If I say it at the end of the interview, would that count?
No.
Well,
we're going to cut you off. We're going to kick
well,
you off.
You could say it to Derek's face when you see him later on, though. So
that works.
He just doesn't have to tell me, and then it'll be fine.
Please don't call me trash to my face.
I would never do that to you, Derek.
Greg, would you like to talk about Urban Meyer? Because we could talk the entire segment about Urban Meyer. Would you like to talk about what's happening, or do you want to get straight into Nebraska?
Hey, no, we can talk about Urban Meyer. That's fine.
Have you been following everything that has been kind of unfolding in the last hour or so?
Not in the last hour. So I kind of broke away and ran to the gym right when Zach Smith kind of started, the quotes started coming out from him. But, I mean, I saw the quotes from Urban Meyer. To me, it just doesn't make sense. Like, I don't – like, if your defense going to be – I knew about the incidents. I reported them. I said I misspoke and wasn't prepared at Big Ten Media Days, even though misspeaking doesn't cause me to lie and attack a reporter's credibility, and now throw my athletic director and administration under the bus. Like, I just don't understand where he's trying to go with this. It just seems like a CYA move, obviously, but I just don't understand how this makes any more sense than what we originally thought was happening in the situation.
Yeah, and since then, Smith has gone on radio, he's gone on TV and talked about how Gene Smith knew, the athletic director knew. Basically, it's just a coordination between him and Urban Meyer to try to cost Gene Smith his job and maybe save Urban Meyer his. Zach was on ESPN SportsCenter, I guess, saying that it would be a quote-unquote crime if Urban Meyer got fired. It's just a bad situation. Maybe don't go on ESPN. Like, maybe have a little bit of PR sense in this case and not make matters worse for yourself.
Yeah, but you also know that people that have the sort of issues that he has generally don't have enough self-awareness not to do that sort of stuff. So I kind of expected this type. I would have expected these types of quotes from him when I first found out that he was going to go on, like, this little media tour that he's on right now.
Let's talk about Nebraska. let's talk about a little bit happier topic, I guess. You wrote about the offensive line. You were at the press conference with us on Thursday, and one of the things that Scott Frost talked about was that he said depth might be an issue on the offensive line, and that kind of goes in contrast to what Greg Austin has said, where he said they feel like they've got good depth, but both guys have said they're going to rotate guys on the offensive line. And part of that is maybe out of necessity with not having the bodies that they would like to have, but part of that is also because of the tempo that they want to play out. They want to make sure everybody's fresh and ready to go. You wrote a story on them rotating after, you know, last year where we had five guys and this is who we're rolling with. How do you feel about the idea of going with more of a rotation on the offensive line?
You know, it's interesting on this thing is that this has been a discussion, and I wrote this too, that it's been a discussion for what seems like at least the entire Riley tenure, right, that the offensive line needed to be rotated. And at first, I kind of was against that. Like, I thought, hey, nope, you get your five guys. You play those five guys, and those should be the ones that lead the way for you because you determine they're the best five. Well, what we saw over the course of the Riley tenure was that they weren't necessarily picking the correct guys, and we saw that based on when different guys got into game situations and then outperformed the guys that they had been sitting behind. And then you also realize that they weren't necessarily building up depth behind those starters, because you'd have injuries pop up here and there along the offensive line, as you always do on the offensive line. So you needed to build that depth. So now I've kind of come around on this. I think that it is a good idea, and I think Tanner Farmer echoed those sentiments that Greg Austin had about it being a good idea, because it would keep guys fresh with the pace that they're going to play at and build depth to allow that those young guys that haven't played in the program as much, when it is their turn, whether they have to come in for an injury or they have to come in later in their career to be the guy as a starter, they'll actually have their feet wet. So now I'm kind of on board with this idea.
Greg Smith joins us on Hail Varsity Radio at Greg Smith HV on Twitter. Greg, we saw recently that Dominic Watt tweeted "all finished" on Twitter, and then we also have been hearing stuff about Noah Vedral. He's waiting for his eligibility from the NCAA. What can you tell us about those two guys and what we might see for them coming to be a part of the program for this season in the future?
Yeah, I think sooner rather than later you'll see Dominic Watt join the team. I think that he's just kind of waiting on one thing kind of in the red tape realm. It's not necessarily that he's waiting for a test score or he has to finish another class or anything like that. I think he is good to go. He's just waiting on a little bit of red tape to be cleared up, and I think he'll be a good player down the road for the Huskers. We'll have to see where he is in physical shape-wise. Is he ready to be able to come in and play major college football after getting here late? As far as Noah Vedral, that wasn't is kind of a mystery for me. Like that issue, it kind of went completely silent. Like, I knew that they had the option to try and, you know, go after the waiver, and the last I had heard, they were going to try and do it. Then all of a sudden it went silent. I assumed that it wasn't going to happen. And then this week we saw a couple of guys, I believe, at Florida get waivers and eligibility to play right away. So it kind of brought all of that back up. So that's a long way of saying to you, I don't know what the Noah Vedral situation. Right now I'm going to continue to expect that he's not going to play this year.
Do you buy the Hail Varsity conspiracy theory that he has already gotten that waiver and Frost is just not going to announce it until Vedral's, you know, quarterback one on the depth chart?
I love the Hail Varsity tinfoil hat slack conspiracy theory. It has been great all day, but no, I don't necessarily believe that, because I feel like that would have gotten out. Like Frost admitted yesterday, not a lot of things happen in this program without it leaking out, just the nature of a program this big and important. So no, I don't think that that's happened.
Greg Smith joins us on Hail Varsity Radio at Greg Smith HV on Twitter. And Greg, you mentioned Tanner Farmer a little bit earlier, and we were talking with Bill Dolman about it, and he just pretty much idolized what Tanner Farmer brings to this program, the characteristics, the mentality, everything surrounding him. And we brought up captains, and you guys talked to Tanner Farmer about it, or he talked about it in the press conference, was quoting it. And so do you think that he will be chosen as a captain before the beginning of this season? And do you think that he is the right fit for it, despite him saying he wasn't a captain on his high school team, that he's not that vocal, but he is trying to become one? Do you think he's the right fit for the job?
You know, it's interesting. I had not thought about that until you just asked me. And after his comments yesterday and the way he carried himself and the way that he set the tone for the guys that followed him at the podium, because those guys were walking and talking a little bit different after they heard him speak, I think he kind of has to be a captain, right? Because as long as that, all of what he just said and has been doing over the summer doesn't just completely go away, yeah, I definitely think he has what it takes to be a captain. And it's interesting to see, like, guys like him that were not, that have admittedly weren't very vocal in the past. Another guy like that is Ben Stille, who mentioned being more vocal now, and he has not been in that role in the past or is not used to that. It's nice to see guys like that stepping up and team breeding those new leaders, because you're going to need that going forward.
Greg Smith with us on Hail Varsity Radio. And once again, kind of going to the whole captain persona, but going off that a little bit, they talked about the mentality shift. You wrote up an article on that on the Hail Varsity website. You can go ahead and read that at hailvarsity.com. Tell us a little bit about what that article consisted of and how last year's team is transitioning into this year's team and how they're affecting it mentally, pretty much, and how they're changing and attacking this upcoming season.
Yeah, one of the buzzwords that always comes up, it seems like over an off season, or especially when a new coaching staff comes in, is culture, or different culture, or new culture. And I think that definitely is something, that notion is real with this coaching staff. And I think it also boils down to something else I want to write about over the weekend, which is trust between these players and the staff and the credibility that they've built up. But for this article, I think that a lot of the off season momentum and the talk of, you know, good things have happened for Nebraska's football program over the offseason. There's been very few bumps in the road and a lot of positive news. So do they have offseason momentum? And Scott Frost flatly said that offseason momentum is for newspapers and fans on websites, which is kind of a huge quote from yesterday. And the players basically back that up. They're ready to show that the work that they put in over the offseason will actually lead to more victories and better play on the field. And I think that is the type of mentality that you want your team going into year one of Scott Frost.
Will it? I asked Aaron this question earlier. Like, do you think, do you think it will?
I do think it will, actually. Like, one of the things, because not necessarily because that's going to make them better football players, but I think it's because it'll make the effort better and the effort more consistent. One of the things that was startling for all of us, the fans, media, everybody watching the team last year, is to see the lack of effort and to see certain games where you hate saying that teams quit or that guys quit, but there really isn't any other way to describe some of those games last season. So, yeah, I think that it will make a difference because you won't see anything that approaches that level of a lack of effort.
And I think that comes with trust in the staff as well. And that was one thing that we heard a bunch of guys talk about, not just yesterday, but at Big Ten Media Days in Chicago, was that there was a lack of trust last year, and that there's been a conscious effort ever since the staff got here to rebuild that trust. And I think that can play a huge, huge role in terms of how successful a team can be, because I mean, if you trust what's happening, if you trust what the coaches are telling you, I think that impacts how you play on the field. Would you agree?
No, I would definitely agree, and I think that's something I believe that you've written about the coaching staff and the trust and the level of family between the coaching staff. I think that that also plays a role into this and trickles down to the players. Because think about it. The players no longer see that, let's just pull out a totally made-up scenario, that Dante Williams and Bob Diaco don't necessarily see eye-to-eye, right? Or that John Perella and Bob Diaco don't exactly see eye-to-eye on schemes or players playing or what have you. The players feel that, right? That doesn't exist with this staff because this staff is so in lockstep with each other and gets along so well, and they're all on the same page and they know they're taking their orders from Scott Frost. Like, that sort of stuff matters when it comes to how a football team performs and reacts to coaching. Not that those situations happened in last year.
Greg Smith, follow him on Twitter at GregSmithHV on Twitter, and be sure to read his articles on HaleVarsity.com. Greg, thanks for joining us today. We'll get caught up again soon.
Hey, thanks as always, guys. You guys have a good weekend, and you are not trash.
Appreciate it. Have a good one.
Thanks.
Chime in 402-466-ESPN or email the show, Chris@HaleVarsity.com.
Just try me. Try me.
Back to Hale Varsity Radio.
Welcome back to Hale Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Danny Burke alongside Dr. PD at Dr. PDHV on Twitter, at Danny Burke 5 on Twitter. Thanks to Greg Smith for joining us on the show, as well as Bill Dolman and Aaron Sorensen. We'll have those little Twitter clips uploaded on SoundCloud. We'll get those up. Also, the podcast, you can find that on iTunes and, of course, on HaleVarsity.com. And he kind of hit it last segment with Greg Derrick, you talking about trust, and you connected it with last program to this regime coming up now. There wasn't that much under Mike Riley, as Luke Gifford pointed out, pretty much. A lot different under Scott Frost now, and you could tell that there wasn't that trust there last season, just in those blowout games. With the football program, you have to rely on each other as teammates and the coaching staff and the program as a whole, but it was clear that it wasn't there, and it's evident now that it seems like it's going to be completely different this season despite the record.
I'm not even paying attention to Nebraska anymore. I'm more focused on the diary of, or the Breaking Benjamin tour that's coming to Pinnacle Bank Arena. You lost me. With that last commercial, you lost me. I'm out.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I mean, trust, it's... Gerald Foster talked about this at Big Ten Media Days, mm-hmm. and said you need that. You need it because when you're on the field and you're how did he phrase it? I'm trying to pull up this quote. That's what allows people to play and allows people to do what they want, because they believe that you'll be doing your job, and that opens them up to play their game. That's so huge. And when I think this is not, you know, me reporting, this is just like what I think based on what I've heard. When they talk about not trust, I think it's not trusting Diaco. I think it's not trusting the defense. I don't know that there wasn't...
Not thinking that the scheme's going to work?
Yeah. I don't know that there wasn't trust in the offense. I think that a lot of it was just not knowing what they were supposed to do defensively and not trusting that...
I don't think they would trust their D-line to stopping the run, getting the ball back. The D-line maybe didn't trust the offense as much as giving them a break to rest up. Like, no disrespect to Tanner Lee, but there's always that thought that he's throwing an interception there and you'd have to get right back on the field.
I think there was a little bit of that, yeah, that the defense maybe didn't trust that the offense could give them favorable field position, that the offense could give them leads that a defense needs to be able to function properly. I mean, this defense now... I think everybody trusts that they're going to have a lead, that they're going to have a margin that they can work with. Or if not, you know, the defense can go try to make a play. And that's the shoot your shot thing. That's the go make a play, and you'll have guys behind you
exactly
that can pick up the slack.
Right.
And I think from a scheme standpoint, last year guys just didn't know where other guys were going to be. They didn't know where they were supposed to be. They didn't know what they were supposed to be doing. And I think just simplifying everything helps so much. That's a shot at the last staff, and it's one of many shots that has been taken at the last staff, is it not? I mean, Scott talked about inevitably we'll lift more in season than they did last year. Like, there have been shots at the way things have been handled recently, right?
Absolutely. Let's see if we can pull that clip up here. There's Frost talking about the strength and conditioning, correct?
Yeah, I forgot we had that queued up. Yeah, cue that up. Let's listen to that one.
We've had about as good an offseason as we could have had. We've stayed healthy. We've added some pieces to the roster. All you have to do is look at our guys right now to see that there was a big difference in the strength and conditioning program. Again, I've said this before, but Zach Duvall is as good as there is in the country. I love his tie back to Husker Power. We're getting that right. It's time to see how much ground we've made, and it's time to make that improvement come to life on the practice field. It's time to prove it. That being said, we're going to lift, I'm sure, harder during the season than they did last year. I think that's kind of inevitable if we lift. I remember going to bull sites 13 days beforehand and taking the whole weight room down with us and it making a difference. Our aim isn't going to be to get stronger during the season. It's going to be to make sure that we don't lose what we've gained through winter conditioning and summer conditioning.
Inevitable. You like that?
Yeah.
I think he's absolutely right.
I think
everyone likes to hear that.
I think, and Luke talked about this too, that he was a fan. He was born here, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a little bit of a, you feel like the criticism has been deserved. But then when you look at it from Scott's perspective, I mean, they're all upset. The guys that weren't a part of this, they're upset that Nebraska got as low as it was. And so I think it's interesting, but it's not surprising to hear things like that. We're inevitably going to lift more than they did before. It's not... I don't know. That's my take. I don't know.
Okay, fair enough. I think I see where you're going. Well, speaking of I don't know and confusion... Let's queue up here Frost's take on the QB battle and what he compared it to a famous board game here.
Have you ever played Monopoly?
Yes.
And you know how the race car and the horse and the iron and the battleship are all on go to begin with? Everybody's on go right now. We might even roll a dice to see who can roll a six and take the first rep. We'll see.
I don't know who asked the question, but I love the response where he's just like, yes, I've played.
Back. Mm-hmm. Yes. What piece did you play with when you played Monopoly?
I never really played Monopoly. Man.
What?
No, I wasn't a big Monopoly player.
How have you never played Monopoly?
I mean, I've played, but it's been forever, and I don't know if I've actually sat down and finished a game.
I think I was always car. I actually think I played, my dad had Star Wars Monopoly.
Ooh.
And I played Star Wars more than I played regular Monopoly. So I was not fighting for like, what is it, Park Place or whatever the big one is. I was fighting for like the Death Star. Like, that was the big one. And I always played, I always played with Luke Skywalker, I think was my little pewter emblem that I had.
Okay.
That I always played with.
I wasn't a big board game guy for games that would take a while. Like, I played Sorry, I can't even think of some other ones.
See, I loved it because I liked the strategy, and no one would ever play it with me because it took too long.
Yeah, and see, I didn't pick it up till like a couple years ago, but I like Risk, actually. That's a fun game to play. I've only played the board game version a couple of times, but they have it on Xbox. You can get like the app for it, and that's it goes a lot faster, and it's actually pretty fun.
Interesting. I played Lord of the Rings Risk.
Oh, okay. So. You can't just play the regular version, right? You always need a movie or book version.
Board games were based off of popular science fiction. is what I'm gathering. What do you make of the quarterback competition? I know we're running out of time here, but we haven't talked about this with you before. What do you make of the quarterback competition? Do you think Adrian is the guy, or does Tristan have it?
I think it's tough, but I think it's going to be Adrian coming down to it. But I also wouldn't be surprised if it was, at least within the non-conference games, we saw first half one, second half the other. And I think we'll get a clear answer by the Colorado game. So I think we're going to see a lot of variation between the quarterbacks in the first two games, in my opinion. But I think coming out of that tunnel first, or coming out of that huddle first, breaking it, is going to be Adrian Martinez. And then I think based on that performance, the third game, you're going to have a consistent one. I mean, Frost did say they'd have one coming out the first game, but I think both will get some playing time. So we'll hit on that a little bit more as we come back, and we'll also get those chances for the Ribfest tickets after this. You're listening to Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Winding down a Friday, heading into the weekend here on Hail Varsity Radio. Danny Burke alongside Derek Peterson at Dr. PDHV on Twitter at DannyBurke5. We'll have some of those blips on SoundCloud uploaded to Twitter after the show from our interviews with Aaron Sorensen, Greg Smith, and Bill Dolman. Some good stuff from all of them. And of course, the podcast you can find on HailVarsity.com and on iTunes as well. Derek, so Greg said we're not trash. We've made it this far. What do you think about our performance?
I feel like trash.
Yeah.
The only thing that I've eaten today is an apple, and I had a cup of coffee. So my head feels like it's about to explode.
Yeah, I'm kind of right there with you. I had Jersey Mike's, but my head's feeling a little bit rough right now.
I need some more caffeine.
Yeah. Are you going to go eat after this, or what's your plan?
Definitely.
Where at?
Panda.
Ooh, Panda, okay. See, I would get Panda a lot because I lived on top there, like we were talking about earlier. Yeah. I live on top of Chipotle, Panda, but now I moved, so I'm farther away from all the good fast food places right downtown.
I get Panda Express way too much. There was a spot where I used to live called Tea Cafe. Like, literally the greatest chicken fried rice I've ever had. Mm-hmm. It was amazing, and I had it way more than I should have had it. And I have not found a place that can...
That
can replace TCAF in my heart.
Okay.
So Panda has kind of just slid in there, become the de facto.
Yeah, I never got Panda back home.
Fried rice.
In Illinois, there wasn't one that close to my house, but since I've been here, I get it a lot. One time, though, I had the orange chicken, just made me feel absolutely terrible. Granted, that's always a 50-50 chance going in with Panda, I feel like, but...
You just have to embrace it.
Yeah, I get the teriyaki and, like, the sweet fire chicken, I think it's called.
Hmm. Yeah. I get fried rice and double orange every single time.
Ooh.
You got to embrace it.
Okay.
Well, if you're not feeling bad, you're not eating Panda.
That's their quote. That's how they market it.
I could do an entire hour just talking about Panda Express.
Well, speaking about talking for an entire hour, we spent a lot on Urban Meyer. Are there any new developments? I see you on your laptop there. Anything new coming up before we
just
cap this off?
I mean, just don't go on ESPN. Maybe have some kind of PR sense. There hasn't been anything new, but he keeps talking and explaining away his wife's injuries.
I think it's best if he keeps silent, but I think Greg also made a good point. It's not surprising that a guy who would do that to his wife would also be very outspoken about this and just willing to speak his mind without considering what he's saying, really.
I just think don't interview him.
But that's how, I mean, everyone's going to take any chance they can to put him on air.
But he's not going to tell the truth. He's going to lie. I think just don't interview him.
Like, just don't antagonize it. Don't keep begging it on.
Exactly. Kinda. Yeah.
Yeah. I hear you.
In the last hour, really, I've become like, let's resolve this situation. Mm-hmm. I'm tired of hearing about Zach Smith. I'm tired of hearing about Urban Meyer. Get them both out.
Yeah.
Don't want to talk about him anymore.
Simplify. Just get rid of him, huh? Yank the cord.
That'd be nice.
All right, well, we have a pair of Capital City Rib Fest tickets to give away. We'll do caller number 5 giving them away all week. We'll continue to do so next week. But right now, one pair, caller number 5, will get you hooked up with Capital City Rib Fest tickets for August 16th through August 18th. Caller number 5 will get that going here. So, Derek, thanks for joining the show. I know we had a last-minute fill-in. Schmitty, I think he'll be back tomorrow, though, is what he tells me. So
that'd be nice.
Yeah. So
I don't know if I can do this 2 days in a row.
I'll be doing this Saturday morning show myself, so going to have to drink a bunch of coffee like you were today to get myself ready for that. But, yeah, once again, thanks for coming in, and thanks for listening, everybody. Be sure to tune in tomorrow for the Saturday edition of Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery.